Welcome to the 251st episode of the 4th and 24 podcast. I am your host for today, second week in a row, Patrick Winograd. We will be back actually in person as well with an NCAA tournament preview bracket, but due to some scheduling conflicts over the last few weeks, a lot of travel for both of us, I will be hosting once again and analyzing all of the action today. In this edition, our topics are an overview of my weekend predictions, our weekly look at the NBA, and of course, our weekly look at college basketball that will be obviously the main attraction of the week. But let's jump right in with a look back at my weekend predictions, which are posted every Thursday on our website, 4thand24.com. Starting in college basketball, I went 2-2 with those predictions. In the NBA, it was a similar story, actually the same story, as I also went 2-2, which brought me to 4-4 overall this week, 1,013 and 654 overall on the career, you could say, I guess, which is a 60.8 winning percentage. Still no change from last week there. But going back, starting at the beginning, started off with number one Houston, who just demolished number 14 Kansas, 76-46. Not a close game at all. Houston locking up the one seed with that win, in my opinion, at least. I think them and Purdue and, of course, UConn are pretty secure in that spot, but we'll talk more bracket stuff later. Number 15, Kentucky beat number 4, Tennessee, 85-81 on the road. Speaking of number 1 seeds, that should have been Tennessee's 1 seed, but they're starting to slip off that line after that loss. So we'll see what happens with that. It's going to be an interesting battle at the end of the season. And then number 7, North Carolina beat number 9, Duke, 84-79. They're one of the candidates to replace Tennessee on the 1 line. We'll see what happens, like I said. And finally, Nevada beat UNLV, 75-65. I got that one correct. I got the Houston game correct, and I got the other two games wrong. But overall, pretty satisfied with my college basketball predictions. In the NBA, I've had some rough weeks recently, so I'm happy that this week I bounced back, went 2-2. The Pelicans beat the 76ers 103-95. When I made the picks, I didn't know that Tyrese Maxey and Embiid would be out. I knew that Embiid would be out, but they have been playing better without Embiid, but still with Maxey recently, and they had actually won some games that caused me to have wrong predictions, so I figured this week I'd go with them, and I got burnt for it. They were actually down by, I think, 30 at the half. They only had 35 or so points, so I'm surprised they came back in this one and made it somewhat close at the end, but in the end, a loss is a loss. A wrong prediction is a wrong prediction. Then, on Saturday, the Celtics beat the Suns 117-107. If you want to get a good predictions record, pick the Celtics. That'll help. Definitely one of the bigger games of the weekend, though. And a good win for the Celtics, of course. Getting that road victory in Phoenix. And then the Bucks beat the Clippers 124-117. That was the other game that I got right this weekend. Another East Coast versus West Coast contender. Guess you could call both of them potential finals previews. Definitely for the teams that are for sure in that conversation. Definitely in the mix, all of them individually. I don't know if those matchups are so likely in on their own, but those four teams definitely going to be in that conversation. And then finally, the Pacers beat the Magic 111-97. I got that one incorrect, unfortunately, but like I said, I'm okay with the 4-4 overall week. There were definitely a few close games, a few breaks that didn't go my way, especially in college basketball with those two close games. But my predictions for next weekend will be posted on our website, as always, on Thursday. And now, we will move on to our look at the NBA. This NBA look and this podcast overall will probably be a bit abbreviated, at least relative to how much content we have in college basketball, because the travel logistics that I talked about earlier. But I will get on with the NBA recap. Most impressive teams of the week, starting with the Pelicans, who went 3-0. They beat Atlanta, they beat Philly, and they beat Toronto. While they didn't play a ridiculously challenging schedule this week, they deserve a lot of credit for taking care of business. I've been hot on this team because I have high expectations with how much star power they have. But they deserve their dues for, you know, taking care of business, going 3-0, even as the Hawks were also on a hot streak. So, you know, typically this would be a really easy schedule, all teams under 500. But, well, two teams under 500 and then Philly, who's been slumping recently. But, you know, as a result of the Hawks' hot streak, it got a little bit harder than it would normally be. But, you know, they need to stack good weeks like this if they want to continue to improve their seeding. Right now, they're fifth in the West, so they're safer in the play-in for now. But the margin for error for any team in the West is just so small that they need to keep this going forward. Then, speaking of margin for error being small, we have the Thunder, who went 3-0 this week. They beat Memphis, Miami, and Portland. The Thunder schedule was as weak, if not weaker, I think weaker, than the Pelicans schedule was this week. But OKC deserves credit for taking care of business as well. They are also, well, not also, because I didn't say what the Pelicans were in their last 10, but they are 8-2 in their last 10, and this win streak has allowed them to claim a half-game lead over Denver for the number one seed in the West. So a big development for that young team to be not only in the mix, but actually at the top of it, pretty close to the end of the season. And then speaking of the Hawks, who I said were on a hot streak this week, they went 3-1. They beat Memphis, Cleveland, and New York. They lost to the Pelicans. While they couldn't finish off the 4-0 week against New Orleans at home, and they lost Sadiq Bey to a torn ACL, so some bad news over the end of the weekend, Atlanta is fighting to even be included in the play-in, and this week built them some cushion from the Nets, even though they're still the 10th seed, so still a valuable week for them to do what they did. Then you have the Rockets. They went 3-1. They beat Sacramento, Portland, and San Antonio. They lost to the Clippers. Look, the Rockets are still 5 games behind the Warriors for the final play-in spot, and the Şengün news on the injury, although he did avoid a major injury, it did look really bad originally, so I guess you could say that's a mixed bag of good reviews and bad review, or good news and bad news. But if they keep playing like this, they might be able to catch one of the teams in the West who's currently in the playoff bracket, play-in bracket, but only if those teams slump. It's going to require help from the other side. They're not just going to make up a 5-game difference between them and the Warriors just on their own. And frankly, I don't think the Warriors are the team that would be able to slump. I think it would be the Lakers if they got injured, or maybe the Kings if teams start to take them seriously and have learned their lesson over the last 2 years, which they clearly haven't. But they're fighting an uphill battle, like I said. But they already have shown some signs of progress from last year, and their fans should be happy with the results of this year regardless, just because they have shown that progress, and I think that's valuable as a franchise long term. Then, moving on to the least impressive teams of the last week, I have the Sixers on here. They went 1-3. They lost to New York. Sorry, their only win of the week was over New York. They won 79-73. When you score 79 points, it should be a loss. That's why I got confused. But they also lost to New Orleans, Memphis, and Brooklyn. Two bad teams, really. And then the Pelicans, of course. But look, the 76ers only claimed one victory this week. And like I said, they didn't even reach 80 points in that game. The Knicks' only star that was healthy was Jalen Brunson. And against New Orleans, as I mentioned earlier, they didn't even have 40 points in the first half. So overall, just a really, really sloppy week for Philly. And obviously, they're not going to continue to play without all of their players. But they should be able to be somewhat competitive without those two, namely being Maxey and Embiid. It's just really, really, it's staggering to see just how bad they are, I think is my comment. They need to pick it up in those types of games. And I said this all season long, but it hasn't happened yet. They did a little bit with just Maxey, but since then, like I said, without him, they're terrible. And they keep dropping in the playoffs as a result, and I don't think that's going to stop. But then you have the Bucks. They went 1-2. They beat the Clippers on Sunday, like I said in my weekend predictions, but they lost to the Lakers and Golden State. So West Coast swing for the Bucks, 1-2. Doc Rivers does get his revenge, but they don't win anything else. I guess that's worth noting. But look, they maintain their place in the standings at second in the East, but there is a chasm the size of the Grand Canyon between them and the Celtics right now. They have no chance to catch up to the one seed after it looked like for a while they should probably be in the race at least and maybe have a chance to catch up before the end of the season. But the Celtics are just obviously running away with that at this point. And then finally, you have the Heat. They went, or not finally, they're second to last team on here. You have the Heat, who went 1-3. They beat Detroit. They lost to Washington, OKC, and Dallas. The Heat's only win this week was against the Pistons. That sentence will automatically place you on this list. But making matters worse for Miami, they also lost to Washington, which is nearly impossible to do at this point in the season. A terrible week for the Heat as they try to move out of the play-in bracket and into the regular playoffs. It doesn't look like they're going to be doing that if they keep playing like this. Although, you know, the Heat have been known to catch fire in the second half. They've done it before. They might do it again. And it looked like they were doing that over the last few weeks to begin with, but just a rough week this week. Then you have the Timberwolves. They went 1-2. They beat Indiana. They lost to the Lakers and Cleveland. That win over Indiana was basically all on Anthony Edwards' shoulders, the way he played in clutch time. You'd be surprised. I mean, look, I would say, not to toot my own horn too much, but even though this is an abbreviated recap, I'd say I have more detail than I normally do because I did see highlights of the big games of the weekends. I was just watching college basketball all weekend and continue to do so, as we'll see in the next segment, because I watched pretty much 80% of the games that I'm about to talk about. But going back to the Timberwolves, they're now down to the third seed in the West after this week. Anthony Edwards' game-saving block and heroics at the end of that game could not save their position there, and they're 5-5 in their last 10, while the Nuggets and Thunder are 9-1 and 8-2 respectively, who are the teams they are chasing at the one seed, and for most of the year were actually leading. But finally, let's turn our attention to college basketball. You're going to be blown away by how many of these games I watched. I'm not going to note all of them, but I will if I go into extended commentary, it probably means I did. But I will start back on Tuesday night with number 3 Purdue, who defeated number 12 Illinois 77-71. A big road win for Purdue. That secured the final one seed. Well, not the final one seed, but secured the one seed for them if it wasn't already secure. So a big win for them. For Illinois, probably lost their opportunity to move up to the 2 seed, but I still think they could be a 3 if they have a good week at the Big Ten tournament. Maybe a win over Purdue at the end of the Big Ten tournament would still actually move them up to a 2. But for now, I think Marquette and then Iowa State and Baylor are pretty solid at the bottom of that 2 line. One of those Big 12 teams will get it, and Marquette likely 2 as well, unless Tyler Kolek continues to be out and the tournament committee has to take that into account, and it looks like he won't be 100% in the NCAA tournament. So that would be an interesting report to talk about. Maybe Marquette fans would turn into Florida State football fans at the end of the season if they lost their 2 seed due to Kolek being out. But anyway, number 14, Kansas beat Kansas State 90-68. Speaking of injuries, this team has been destroyed by injuries all season long. They're just now starting to get healthy again. And then Hunter Dickinson later in the week at Houston, which I talked about in my prediction, so I won't go too much into later. He injured himself, and he will not be playing in the Big 12 tournament. McCullough's resting the Big 12 tournament. Someone's going to pick up a good, a high quad one win that they shouldn't get. But look, I don't think the committee's going to put too much stock into it. They typically don't do that with conference tournament games anyway, but it is worth noting that this Kansas team is limping into the tournament. Despite being preseason number 1, they don't deserve to be in the top 20 right now. I know that they still are, but they definitely don't deserve to be. They're not playing like a top 20 team at all. And that is, of course, due to the injuries. At full strength, they definitely are a top 20 team, but right now they're not at full strength. Then you have Florida. They beat number 16 Alabama 105-87. This is a win that increased Florida's seeding for sure. Put them a few more seed lines up, maybe up to a 6 or a 5, depending on how bullish a bracketologist might be on the Gators. But they undid all of that progress later in the week by losing to Vanderbilt. I won't talk about that, so I'm mentioning it now, but that was a terrible loss. And then you have UNLV, who beat number 21 San Diego State 62-58. This team had won 10 of its final 11 games heading into its final game, which I'll get to later. And this game was huge for them to get this win over San Diego State. Obviously, the top win you can get, at least according to the net, in the Mountain West, although there are plenty of good wins out there, plenty of tournament teams to beat. And UNLV beat a lot of them at the end of the season, but maybe if they had had their roster together from the beginning of the year and those guys hadn't been limited due to the NCAA transfer rules, then this team would end up as a tournament team. But the three quad four losses for this team at the beginning of the year just tanked all of their metrics, and it's just not enough to overcome. They did do significant work in the conference, but they couldn't get that last piece that I'll talk about later. So it is going to be down to the conference tournament in all likelihood. They will need a run probably to the finals to even have a chance at being included. I would argue they just have to win it outright. I don't really think there is a way for them to guarantee a bid without doing so. Then you have Nevada, who beat Boise State 76-66. This was a huge road win. Look, there are two teams at the end of the season in the Mountain West that trended up. Well, three, actually. UNLV, like I mentioned, Nevada, and then Utah State. All three of those teams were super hot by the end of the year, and really could only be beaten by each other, as we'll see later. But Nevada getting this road win really, really helped them out. They had been trailing behind in the metrics for most of the season, and their resume, their strength of record was pretty even with their net and their KenPom ratings, and, you know, they were being dragged down as a result, even though their record was great. But the last few weeks, now their strength of record is lacking in comparison to their net and their KenPom, because they're up near the top 20 in both of those, the latter two that I mentioned, because they've just been playing out of their minds. They've been getting road wins against quad one opponents. And of course, for KenPom, good opponents that are highly rated top 30, top 40-ish by that metric. So they've been getting a ton of credit for that by the computers, and I think real people are starting to see how dangerous this Nevada team could be as well. Definitely one of the teams to monitor in terms of a possible team to make a Sweet 16, maybe Elite Eight, maybe Final Four run as a 5 or a 6 seed, or even a 7 seed. We don't really know where they're going to end up, depending on how they end the season. Then you have number one, Houston, who beat UCF 67-59. We do know where this team is ending up. They will be a 1 seed along with Purdue and UConn, and then, well, talk about the final potential teams there later. But look, another good win for Houston. Going on the road, this one was a quad one win. At the time of the committee's first reveal, I believe Houston had 8 quad one wins. They overall had a really strong metrics based on, I won't quite call it net manipulation, because they did have an okay schedule, and teams typically are afraid to schedule Houston anyway. But they did definitely blow out some really bad teams early in the season, like many of their Big 12 counterparts did. And it certainly helped with their net and their KenPom, but those ratings went even higher because their strength of schedule at the end of the season ramped up, and they just kept winning. And this game is included on that list. They just kept picking up quad one win after quad one win, and I think they ended the year with, I want to say 12 or 13 of them. That might be too many, but it's somewhere in the 10 to 12 range for sure. And then you have UConn, number 2 in the country, who beat number 8 Marquette, 74-67. Marquette lost to Creighton last weekend without Oso Iguodaro and without Tyler Kolek. This game they did have Oso back, but they didn't have Tyler Kolek. I honestly think they deserve credit for competing as well as they did without having their point guard and, you know, all Big East player, maybe all American potentially. So they deserve some credit for still sticking in that game without having Kolek. And UConn has been so dominant against everybody that I really don't think they should be knocked too much for this loss, but we'll see what actually happens in only a few days at this point. Then you have number 4 Tennessee, who beat number 17 South Carolina 66-59. It looked like this was them securing that final 1 seed, because a lot of, I guess the prevailing belief from at least me was that if you can go on the road and beat South Carolina, you could probably handle Kentucky at home. But, you know, Kentucky's on a hot streak. We'll talk about that more later. But I assumed that Tennessee, after getting this win, was going to win that game, win the conference outright, which they had already done by winning this game. But thought they were going to win the conference outright and end up with that final 1 seed just based on the sheer quality and the quality and quantity of their wins. But there are now other teams that are in that mix, and we will talk about that in a second. But number 6, Iowa State, beat number 20, BYU, 68-63. This was an opportunity for BYU to move up to the 4 seed line and be pretty solid in that range. I think right now they're still hovering around a 5 or a 6. I think they're pretty safe as a 5, but the fact of the matter is, if they had been able to beat Iowa State on the road, they A, would have been the first team to do that all season, and B, that would have been a really strong sign of the committee that this team should be in the top 4 seeds. Unfortunately, they didn't get the win, so they do end up still kind of straddling the line between a 4 and a 5, and I think by a large majority of people, still 5 seed. But they still have their chances in the Big 12 tournament, of course, to get higher up in that seeding battle. Then, speaking of a team that tumbled in the seeding battle, probably could have been ahead of BYU and then is now below, Washington beat number 18 Washington State 74-68. Even though Washington fired their coach after this game, it was still a big win for them. They're not looking at a tournament team, obviously, but still, good to end the season with a win over your rival. Then you have Boise State, who beat number 21 San Diego State 79-77 in overtime. I am going to say that I watched this game because it's important. This game was ridiculous. I think if you were to name a game of the year, this is up there at least. If not, it is. Just back-to-back buckets on both sides at the end of the game in the clutch. Just so many different players delivering on either side of the battle. And of course, Boise State ends up with a road win over the preseason number 1 in the Mountain West and closes out the season really, really strong. Max Rice hit a shot from the bottom of the S in the San Diego State logo in overtime with the shot clock expiring. No backboard, just straight swish. there were some crazy things going on in this game. There were shot. There was a clutch shot to send the game to overtime, I think by Chibuzo Abo. So just go back and watch it. And if you don't watch that game, watch number 25 Dayton, who beat VCU 91-86 in overtime. This game on at the exact same time, pretty much on Friday, or actually, I think they were back to back. They weren't supposed to be back to back, but they ended up like that because of how long the Dayton game lasted. But VCU had a strong hold on this game. They were up by, I think, 15 or 17 at the very beginning over Dayton. But Dayton just kept fighting back and, you know, chipping away at the lead. VCU shot maybe 40 or 50 threes, and they made a pretty good percentage of them. But in the end, Dayton was able to deal with the onslaught that the Rams had on offense and get some offense of their own. Obviously, 91-86 is a super high-scoring game. Offense really picked up in the second half as Dayton worked their way back into it. And just what a game. I mean, that's really all I can say about it. And then, turning the attention to Saturday, before we get into ranked action, the first team booked their ticket to the NCAA tournament, it was Morehead State out of the Ohio Valley Conference, who beat Little Rock 69-55 to claim that auto bid. I will be talking about all the auto bids in this episode, along with the last few ranked games that happened between Saturday and Sunday. But I'll move on to the ranked action now. Congrats to Morehead State. Number one Houston, though, beat number 14 Kansas. Mentioned this earlier in prediction, so I won't go into it again. Number two UConn beat Providence 74-60. A big win for UConn. For Providence, I would argue that was a must-win for them to really stay as a firm bubble team. Now they're going to have to make a huge run in the Big East tournament, probably all the way to the finals, if they want to have a chance of making the NCAA tournament without getting that auto bid in the Big East. Number 15, Kentucky beat number 4, Tennessee. Talked about that in my predictions, but again, Kentucky on their hot streak, just continuing to be scorching hot at the end of the season. They are peaking at the right time, although they still don't really play any defense. Then USC beat number 5 Arizona 78-65. Definitely a huge, huge upset. Arizona not supposed to lose that game whatsoever, but they did. And that is something they're going to have to deal with as the season goes on. I thought they could have moved into the final one seed on Saturday night with that win if they had just managed to beat USC by a decent margin. But instead, because of the fact that they lost that game, and I'll skip one game for a second and come back to it, because North Carolina beat Duke, like we mentioned in the predictions, North Carolina is actually that team who's currently in the fourth number one seed. It looked like it was really skewing in Tennessee's favor, and Arizona was kind of the other option if Tennessee faltered a little bit, lost that home game, or lost that away game, or both, obviously. But you know, Tennessee goes 1-1 in that stretch, and then Arizona loses this game to USC, so now you say, okay, well, it can't be them, so who is it? And the battle now is between Tennessee and North Carolina, and North Carolina was not supposed to go on the road and beat Duke, but look, they've done all they can in the conference. I think if they didn't have the Georgia Tech loss, they'd be secure as the final one seed already. That one's kind of holding them back, because that's way worse than Tennessee's worst loss, but at the same time, losing to Georgia Tech does have a 4-1 record in Quad 1A, so I think the committee will kind of excuse any losses to that team that just kind of keeps spoiling everybody, every high-ranked team's days. And at the same time, you look at North Carolina with this win over Duke, they have a season sweep over Duke. You can't do much better in the ACC. That's the best win there is to get. They got it twice, potential to get it a third time if they win the ACC. If they win the ACC and Tennessee wins the SEC, that is going to be a really, really tight conversation. I think Tennessee would get it just off of who they'd have to beat to get there. But those two are definitely the 4 and 5 teams right now. And it's going to be really interesting to see how that battle ends up. And then I'll circle back to Kansas State, who beat number 6 Iowa State 65-58. Needed that win to keep their bubble hopes alive, and they did get it. So congratulations to the Purple Wildcats. There are other Purple Wildcats. Naming the Northwestern, obviously. But look, it was a big win for Kansas State. They needed it, like I said, to stay alive. Now they probably don't need a finals run in the Big 12 tournament. They just need to beat a few good teams on their way. I think in their path, I'm going to pull up the bracket right now. In their path, they do have Iowa State again. They have Texas. So if they're able to beat Iowa State and Texas first and then Iowa State, and then potentially they could have Baylor or Kansas. If they're able to beat those three teams, they're going to be in the tournament. They wouldn't need to beat Houston in the finals or anybody in the finals to get there. But that is a tough, tough, tough road. And I don't exactly think they're going to do that. But moving on, number 8 Marquette beat Xavier 86-80. Important for them to get that win without Kolek once again. A tough road win for Xavier. They were kind of out of they're out of the tournament discussion. They've been a feisty team all year long, played a really tough schedule, but just not able to stay afloat. Under 500 on the season, so they're going to need an auto bid to make it. They'd have to be a bid stealer. Then you have number 10 Creighton, who beat Villanova 69-67. Look, Villanova's tournament lives were on the line in this game, and they came out flatter than I've ever seen a team come out. I've just never seen something like that. They were horrible on defense in the first half, and all they needed to do was just be average. And Villanova's deficit would have been, you know, maybe 7-8 points if Creighton had started out the game with, I don't know, like 15 points in the first 8 minutes or something like that. But instead, I think Creighton had like 25 points, I want to say. I'm gonna actually go back and check this, but I believe that Creighton opened up that game with a run that put them up by 17, something like that. They were up 18-3 5 minutes in the game. They were actually up 24-3 6 minutes in the game. So, look, you can't do that if you're Villanova. I mean, they just dug way too big of a hole against a good team. Creighton didn't do anything on offense for the rest of the game, pretty much, but it didn't matter. I mean, it was 30-8 8 minutes into the game, and Villanova just gave themselves no chance to come back. It's just really disappointing to see that from a team that had their tournament lives on the line. If they won that game, they probably were trending towards a bid, not guaranteed, but at least very, very prominent in the conversation, probably in the last four buys territory had they won that. But instead, they are last four in, maybe first four out for me at least. And then you have Texas Tech. They, speaking of securing bids, they took care of business against the number 11 team in the country, Baylor, and beat them 78-67. Baylor's been playing really good basketball recently, so this win is going to stick heavy in the minds of the committee. I like what Texas Tech has. Their resume is pretty strong. And had the battle for Atlantis Field not ended up so bad in the rest of the season, they really could be trending higher up. But unfortunately for them, those teams have had some rough years, namely Michigan. Then you have number 16 Alabama, who beat also battle for Atlantis failure, Arkansas 92-88 in overtime. Alabama should not have gone overtime in this game. That's about all I have to say. They did, but they did pull out the win, and that's what's important at this point in the year. It's as much about avoiding bad losses as it is about picking up good wins. Alabama's nowhere near the bubble anyway, so not really important for them, but definitely could have impacted their seeding, could have fallen maybe down to a five if they had lost that game, and instead they do end the game strong and claim that victory over the Razorbacks. Then, number 17, South Carolina, beat Mississippi State 93-89, sticking in the SEC. Mississippi State, like Texas Tech, like Villanova, probably could have locked up a bid with that win. Unfortunately, not able to do it, not able to get the win. It was an overtime loss, though, no shame to them. But look, South Carolina almost choked this game multiple times, but from their perspective, this should secure at least a five seed. I know that their metrics are just bad, but look, they gave Providence a four seed with the number 32 in the net. I think if South Carolina performs up to expectations or where people think they would, how far people think they would advance in the SEC tournament, like up, just have an average tournament there. I don't see any way that you could take a team that only has like five or six losses in the SEC and take them out of the bracket, and obviously not take them out of the bracket, but take them out of the top four conversation, at least definitely not take them out of the top five. So South Carolina trending strong against the metrics. And then finally, in the last two games of Saturday action, number 22 Utah State beat New Mexico 87-85. A big win for Utah State, like I said, to stay hot at the end of the season. New Mexico fighting for their lives on the bubble. This is still a strong performance to go on the road against the regular season champions of their conference and keep it close and only lose by two. But you almost argue that they needed a win because they were pretty much last team in, already out in some people's minds before that game even happened. So a big loss to pick up, but at the same time, not a bad performance. A good indication that they can make the run that they need to in the Mountain West Conference Tournament. Then you have Nevada, who beat UNLV 75-65. I hinted at this all week long. The only team hotter than UNLV in the entire conference was Nevada. And they proved that with that win on Saturday night in the rivalry game. Very important for their seeding, like I said, especially because UNLV would have been, I think, a quad two or quad three loss, depending on where they shake out in the net. Then, finally, Sunday action in the Big Ten. You have number three, Purdue, who beat Wisconsin 78-70, a very good win for the Boilermakers, although that was a home win, and, you know, it's quad one, but everybody knows that Wisconsin should not be a quad one win at this point in the year. They've been playing so bad for so long. They're still not taking that much of a hit in their seeding because of it. I have them at like a 7 or an 8, and I think that's technically outlandish. Like, it's really low for them, but anyway. Then you go number 12, Illinois. Like I said, have a chance to improve their seeding. They had another quad one game at the end of the year after the Purdue game, and that was this road game at Iowa. They won 73-61, so a strong performance for them allows them to stay in that kind of 3-4 seed conversation. Definitely a 4 seed right now. Could easily go higher. And for Iowa, that was a win that could have pushed them into the field. Instead, they just remain on the wrong end of the bubble. I still think they have a pretty good chance of making the NCAA tournament. It's just that their bracket is kind of tough. They play Ohio State in the first round, who's been hot at the end of the season, and then they rematch with Illinois. So they'd have to pull off the upset that they couldn't pull off at home and do it on a neutral court. I just don't know if that's happening. If they did, they'd be in the tournament, in my opinion. But if they could pick up the win over both Ohio State and Illinois, I think they'd have a pretty strong case, depending on how the metrics shook out with the margins and all that stuff. But look, that's all I got for major conference action the weekend. That was like 20 minutes. Finally, we can move on to conference tournaments once again. Stetson beat Austin Peay 94-91. That secured an auto bid for the Hatters. Great nickname, by the way. That's their first NCAA tournament appearance of all time, so congrats to them. Very, very big win, even though they will be a 16 seed and probably will lose pretty quickly. There are different definitions for what a successful season is based on what team you are. If you're Stetson, making the tournament, even if they get bounced in the first four, the first four games against a fellow 16 seed, it still is a massive success for them. Based on where that program has been, obviously. Then you have Drake, who beat Indiana State 84-80. This game is massively important because if Indiana State had won, I think it would just be Indiana State in the tournament from the Missouri Valley. Now you have Indiana State as an extra team on the bubble while Drake is guaranteed to make it. Definitely a strong bid-stealing conversation early on, although I guess it's not a bid stealer if Indiana State doesn't make it, and that still remains to be seen. I currently have them in, but I don't know if they'd make it. I'm not very confident in that. I'm not very strong in that belief, and I still haven't even reevaluated stuff based on Sunday metrics after the Monday metrics update based on Sunday's games. And then move on from that conversation because that's a really, really long conversation. Longwood beat UNC Asheville 85-59. Pure dominance from the Lancers to get their second tournament appearance in the last 3 years, despite the fact that they matched up with Drew Pember, who is the two-time, I believe, Conference Player of the Year, and was trying to get his second conference championship as well. But Asheville not able to do it. They also came out really flat, like Villanova, although this was maybe more of Longwood coming out on fire than it was Asheville coming out flat. They just really didn't have a response at any point in time for Longwood, and Longwood had a response for any type of run Asheville tried to make. But a 16 seed for the Lancers, they probably will lose in the first round, but at the same time, again, pretty successful season for the program, pretty successful few years here. And then you have James Madison, who beat Arkansas State 91-71 to clinch their auto bid. They were not going to make the tournament despite having 30 wins had they lost this game, but instead, they win the game, they secure the auto bid. They will be a very, very popular upset pick somewhere along the, I think a 12 seed, they could be an 11, I guess, but I have them as a 12. Might have to reevaluate that, but we'll see. They're going to be a super trendy upset pick, though, a really, really good team that obviously had that win at Michigan State to start the season, and I think is more than capable of beating a 5 seed or a 6 seed, depending on the matchup. They have some matchup problems that some other high-seeded teams might not be able to deal with, depending on who it is. Like I said, matchup dependent. And then you have Samford, who beat East Tennessee State 79-69. That secured the auto bid for the Bulldogs. They had a dominant season in SoCon, and they definitely deserve this auto bid. They get it as a 13 seed, and they should move on and be a strong contender to maybe get a game. I don't know if they're good enough to beat a 4 seed, but you never know. It's March, right? Then you have the WCC, I almost said WWE. You have the WCC semifinals. St. Mary's beat Santa Clara 79-65, and Gonzaga beat San Francisco 89-77. setting up the matchup that literally always ends the season in the WCC, Gonzaga and St. Mary's. I would call it this year the battle for a 7 or a 6 seed. I think if St. Mary's claim that win, they could get a 6. I think if Gonzaga gets that win, they will get a 6, depending on what else happens in other conferences, but they'll both be somewhere along those 6, 7, 8 lines. Maybe it would be a steal for one of them to get a 6 seed, honestly, but it's possible. Likely it's going to be the winner is a 7, loser is an 8. I guess there's a chance St. Mary's could drop to a 9, but we'll just have to see. And we will see on Sunday when the bracket comes out. But for now, that wraps this edition of the 4th and 24 podcast. Please be sure to check out our next podcast, which will be on Tuesday, March 19th, where we will once again look back at my weekend predictions, have another look at NBA action, and preview the NCAA tournament and talk about some of the bracket snubs, how I did. But in the meantime, be sure to check out my additional content, which includes my NCAA tournament bracket that will be posted on Mondays and Fridays. I guess there aren't any Monday updates in the rest of the season. But surprise, I will be posting another update tomorrow, mostly for my own sanity, so that I have things kept together before conference tournaments start. But that is a special Wednesday update that obviously won't happen for the rest of the year because then there won't be any more brackets. But Wednesday, Friday, and then Sunday, the final bracket, compare how I did with the committee, blah, blah, blah. But also my picks for next weekend's games, which will come out on Thursday, as always. And all of that on our website, 4thand24.com. That's the number 24, THAND. Wait, no, it's not. That's the number 4, THAND, the number 24.com. Thank you for listening.